You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is the 2nd of December, only 3 weeks to go until Christmas. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks, Sven. Things are been under the microscope of censorship, but sure, we'll come to that point at some point in the programme.
Yes, we're going to. Censorship is going to be the subject of today's programme. I know people were hoping to hear something from Messerschmitt today, but he's still working on his documentary, on the Leon Degrelle documentary. He's very hard at work on it. He assures me that he wants to try and get it finished for next Friday. So if anyone's in the chat room next Friday and they talk nicely to him, he might send them a link to a preview version of it. I know it's going to be really good. He's put so much work into it. He's got reenactment videos in it, stills in it, videos. He's done loads of digging to find visual accompaniments to go with it. We've also worked on the audio. So, and as he tells me, it should be out for next Friday. So it will be released in time for Christmas, which is good news. So hopefully we'll have him here next week. As I say, this week we've got me and Dennis, and the subject is going to be on I've forgotten censorship.
Your brain's just been censored.
Yeah, I just censored myself there, completely forgot the word that I was trying to be talking about. It's because I'm trying to do half a dozen things at once before we get right into the meat of the program, although this is pretty much to do with the same thing. I've got a message from Jez Turner from the London Forum. And he says, we're all looking forward to spending a well-deserved rest over the festive season with friends and family. It is fitting then, at this time of year, that we spare a moment to think of our white brothers and sisters worldwide who will not be able to be with their beloved ones. These are comrades who languish in Zog prisons for merely speaking the truth or for defending themselves and comrades from physical attack by the agents of darkness. All successful revolutionary movements of whatever stamp take good care of their prisoners of war. Prison can be a lonely, dangerous place where small things matter immensely, and so there is no better way to raise a prisoner's morale and esteem among fellow prisoners than to send him a Christmas card. Remember, mail is monitored for anything politically incorrect, so if you prefer, you can do this anonymously. It is the thought that counts. Send early to avoid the Christmas slowdown in mail getting through. If you could include a book of stamps or a postal order payable to the governor, it would be a bonus. Keep the politics as moderate as possible. For example, a fellow patriot or white brother sends you Christmas Yuletide greetings and wants you to know he is thinking of you. Stay strong. We are going to win. A brief message of thanks or hope is enough. Note, for a British prisoner to receive a card from abroad, especially the USA, has added kudos, even more so since Trump's historic victory. And Jez has a list of 20 prisoners of war, which you can find the list at the Daily Stormer, and I'll also put it up on Radio Aryan. But one of them, the main one really, is Joshua Bonehill, who I think is facing 4 years in prison. They're also trying to take him to court again this week, I believe. They're going through various pages on his website, just pulling out one page after another and hoping to have a separate trial for each page. But Joshua Bonehill, who's probably the most well-known of these political prisoners, who again has been censored. I mean, all he was sent to prison for was a cartoon picture of a Jew. And I've got the address here. If you want to send him a Christmas card or send him some stamps, send him a letter, you know, just send him anything. Let him know that we are thinking of him. So if you want to send something to Joshua Bonehill, this is the address. A for Alpha, 5933, D for Delta, M for Mango, Her Majesty's Prison, Rochester, 1 Fort Road, Rochester, Kent, M for Mango, E for Elizabeth, 1, 3, Q for Queen, S for Sierra. And of course, that's got United Kingdom after it, if you're going to send him something from America. And as I say, you can find that list at the Daily Stormer and also at Radio Aryan. But all these people are being sent to, have been sent to prison for breaking free speech laws, basically, for having opinions that the government don't like, that the regime cannot stand to hear. And of course, one of the things that we know the regime really cannot stand to hear is the truth about Adolf Hitler and what went on in World War II. And I hear you've been a victim of this yourself this week, Dennis. I believe all of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, has been removed from YouTube again. Is that right? Or do you want to tell the listeners about this?
Well, it's only the long version, which was on our channel. There's still other channels still running the series, unlike, you know, a year ago now, when on a Monday they just did a complete wipeout of the soundtrack or took the documentary down. This is just our channel. I think it stems from somebody who was I was in a commentary with the comments, and he started off reasonable, but then you could see him turn what his real beliefs were, and eventually somebody on that channel blocked him. It wasn't me; it was somebody from the website who blocked him. And then he came over to my channel and started aggressively having a go again. And you know, I only take so much, and I'm just talking to a wall. So I eventually blocked him. The next thing I know, I was informed that it had been taken down, and what seems to be a bogus copyright claim. The guy was threatening to go to places like DreamWorks and complain about me using the copyright of Spielberg with Saving Private Ryan and the Schindler's List pieces in the documentary. But like I say to most people who bring up this copyright, when I did the documentary, there was no real laws in the situation that we were in. You know, we were at war. I was trying to tell the truth. And, you know, there's no copyright law on this planet is going to stop someone from telling the truth if they're really, you know, believing what they do. And this is exactly what how I took my stand on it. And so whatever tool I could use, you know, to get the truth across, is what I used. And unfortunately, you know, turning the tables on Swindler's List, which proved to be a fake true story, and Saving Private Ryan, which consequently turns out to be a New World Order invasion of Germany, as proven in the second documentary with the eye over the pyramid at the Omaha Beach Memorial today, could be seen. So, you know, all these things needed to be revealed, and the way to reveal it, in my opinion, was to show these scenes and I know the means of getting actors to play that role, especially invading Normandy. So it didn't really come in. There was no question about it. If copyright had been broken, copyright had been broken, but that wasn't the, you know, I wasn't going to be stepping on eggshells trying to tell the truth.
Well, I don't, you know, surely you've found those bits of film online. Surely they are available online. People can download the films that you actually use to make the documentary. I find that somebody saying, well, oh, it's a copyright violation, I don't think that's out of their allegiance to DreamWorks or to Hollywood at all. That's just
not at all.
Because they want to silence you, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's just an excuse rather than argue whether the actual story that I'm telling is true or not. What their argument is, oh, you shouldn't have used that bit because they know it's true.
Well, surely it's a tribute to the people that actually made the film. If you think the film is good enough to then use it for something else, you know, I mean, when you have songs that people write, you've got famous tunes like Beatles tunes, kids will sing them in school. You know, the teachers will teach the children to sing these songs, and all the musicians up and down the land will play cover versions of these songs, and it's seen as a homage to the band that actually wrote those songs to hear it. So the fact that you're actually using the film that was made for Saving Private Ryan shows you that this is a good film, it's well made, and it's adaptable, and it can be used to tell more than one story. And what they're trying, what they're saying there is that they want to stifle creativity. They not only do they want to censor what's actually being told in the story, but they also want to stifle your creativity and tell you that you can't use this film, which is available for everybody on the internet already. It's like with music, when they say about, you know, copyright claims with the music, but the music is already out there. If you've bought the CD and you've got a copy of it, surely you have the right to take a sample of that music and make your own music with it, you know. And well, that's what you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is political, because check, for instance, you know, the copyright claims against any of the music I've used, which funnily enough was in the instigation of the first ban, but then YouTube put it back up again. For what reason, I've yet to find out. But they must have thought it must be okay to put back up again. But the same music is still on the channels that I took it off originally on YouTube. But because, you know, for some reason, you know, they're not making a documentary about truth, then them channels aren't affected. There's one or two channels, obviously, you know, you go on and you see some videos being taken down. I mean, Bob Dylan, for instance, you'd be very hard pushed to find a Bob Dylan track on YouTube. He's one of them artists that, you know, must have constant people watching out for that type of thing, because I've very rarely seen one of his songs up there, and he's got many, many songs. So consequently, you know, it's all about politics, and people use certain techniques, certain bogus copyright claims, you know, in packs. Usually, you know, they come with like three or four of, you know, claiming copyright, and eventually YouTube will take it down and wait for some kind of a reply. And it used to be that you could just claim that, you know, the copyright is wrong, and then they would have to prove it. But apparently, talking to the people at the website, things have changed slightly, where now if you have a video taken down and you want to, you know, take it further, you've got to now provide all the information and all the personal information, which in a political environment, most people wouldn't really want to declare.
Yeah, so they're actually asking for personal information from you before they'll do anything else. You have to actually identify yourself. So if you're saying anything that conflicts with the opinions of the regime, then you're likely to get into trouble for it. So again,
yeah, go on.
I was going to say, again, that's another way of censoring you, isn't it? All these different ways they have of censoring you.
Yeah, cute. It's cute ways. PayPal does a similar thing. I think PayPal just come with a play where they're limited to so many withdrawals, and then they want to question, you know, the legality of it all. Is it using your real name? Are you using a real, et cetera? Where once over, like, they weren't stringent. And so consequently, again, in this political environment where people, I mean, people wouldn't even go to the website we are going on through a proxy at one point. In fact, they probably still do, you know, because they know that, you know, fingerprints on the internet can be left, and they don't want to be seen in that light. So when it comes to a point like, I know one or two nationalists in America had the PayPal account stopped because of Jews who had instigated against, you know, going in touch with PayPal, mentioned that, you know, that these were National Socialist friendly, and hence PayPal then shut the doors.
Well, so it's not just PayPal. I know that Patreon have done that, LiberaPay. In fact, the only payment facility online that isn't actually going to be, can't be shut down for nationalists is Bitcoin. And just about all the well-known sites, you think John Friend, Daily Stormer, Lee, yeah, Rogers, the Info Stormer, Mike Delaney, you know, all these people have all had the ability to receive funds through PayPal taken from them. And then they've moved on to other ways, such as Google Wallet or LiberaPay. And again, that facility has been taken as well from these Jews lobbying these payment companies and saying, if you don't stop funding their money, we're going to go public and say that you are funding National Socialists, or you are, yeah, funding Jew haters, or hate is what they call it, isn't it? So you're funding hate. It's a basic, yeah, human right to be able to try to enter into business transactions. I mean, it's something human beings have always done for thousands of years. We've engaged in trade, and by withdrawing that facility, they're taking away a basic human right. They wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't on the internet. You know, they cannot do it. A bank cannot withhold the ability to transact because of a political reason. You know, they're not allowed to do it. It's discrimination. But online, for some reason, PayPal are able to get away with it. And because we haven't got enough clout to get a class action against them, they get away with it. This is another form of their attempts to silence us. And we see that again recently with advertising companies. We've seen Lego have said that if the Daily Mail don't stop producing stories telling the crimes of the immigrants, they're going to withdraw all their advertising. In fact, they have withdrawn their advertising. Lego used to give away free Lego kits for children with the Sunday Mail on Sunday. They've withdrawn that. Kellogg's as well, the cereal company, they've said to Breitbart, if you don't change your editorial policy and start just showing stories that the regime is happy with, we're going to stop advertising with you. And again, Kellogg's have stopped advertising with them. So they're withdrawing their funding from mainstream sites like Breitbart and the Daily Mail for getting too close to the truth with what they're publishing. There's all these different ways of doing it, isn't there?
Well, this happened in football as well, because the footballer Anelka, who used to play for Arsenal, Real Madrid, came back and played. I think it was Coventry. I think he was playing for at the time. When he made this this sign on his two fingers on his elbow, and the club at first were standing by him, but then all the sponsors, claiming that this was an anti-Jewish sign, threatened to pull all their advertising and money out of the sponsorships, and the club had to back down, and Elka had to leave the club, and eventually plays football somewhere in the heart of Africa.
Well, we've seen again, it's probably the Canal salute. We saw that with...
that was it, yeah.
Yeah, with the French comedian, I think Mbala or something, and he's been locked up and banned from performing. We saw Alison Chablot, who was performing at the Edinburgh Fringe, and she was banned from the Fringe for doing the Canal salute and for singing political songs, basically. Satirical songs about the Jews and the Holocaust. I mean, these were funny songs, and she was banned from performing there, and they're charging her with hate crimes for singing songs which make people laugh. You know, people aren't coming out away from a concert thinking, I want to kill Jews. People are sitting there grinning from ear to ear, laughing at the tunes.
They used to do it with the Irish, but it's not politically correct now. Oh, they used to do it with any nationality. It's just that, you know, we're so under the microscope now with what we're saying. I mean, somebody this week, I think it was Eric Bristow, for instance, when the paedophile ring came out in football this week over the last 20 years, I think it was Bristow, he actually turned around and said that these men were wimps because when they got older, they should have sorted it. And immediately was sacked from Sky. And I know the point he was making because, these paedophiles have got away literally with murder and nothing was ever been done about it. And the other paedophiles they do catch anyways is dead ones.
Well, when people tried to speak up about it, they were either bought off or they were frightened off. This seems to be the thing. You know, you can criticise white people as much as you like. You can accuse white people of whatever you like. But if you point out facts about homosexuals or about minorities or about Jews, then they don't care that it's facts. They'll just say that it's hate. If they don't like it, they will just call it hate. And the way the laws are in Britain, it doesn't matter if it's factual what you're saying. If a minority feels that they were offended by what you said, then it was hate. And a minority doesn't even have to be offended. Somebody else could think that what you said might possibly offend a minority, and then they can take you to court for it. It's absolutely ludicrous, these laws, Dennis.
Yeah, this is exactly the way that they got Sweden to take down, ban the Christmas lights, because now, there's no Christmas lights allowed outside in Sweden, because a certain people said that the Muslims would be offended. Whether Muslims are offended or not didn't really matter. The fact is that the Christmas lights no longer go up in Sweden. And this will happen across Europe because, as I explained in Communism by the Back Door, Europe is communist.
Well, this is what you've got there, is self-censorship. The Swedes are censoring themselves out of a fear that they might offend Muslims. So they're censoring themselves. And this is what happens with all the brainwashing. You end up censoring yourself. We can all see that the races are different, but the liberals end up censoring that thought and saying, how can I possibly have that thought? All the races are equal. I must reaffirm that all the races are equal and blacks don't look like monkeys. You know, that's the natural instinctual thought that we have. Blacks look like monkeys, but we censor ourselves and say, no, we're all the same. Everybody's the same. It's just a different skin color. How many times do you hear that when they say it's just different skin color, when the bone structure is entirely different, the character of the race is entirely different? You wouldn't even have forensic science if all the races were the same. You know, they can tell from a scrap of bone what race that those remains are from. You know, we are different. So much is... So much is obvious to us, and once the veil is lifted from our eyes, we can see it. But before that happens, you know, we self-censor ourselves. You know, I tried to show some people your documentary, Dennis, and they've had it for mm-hmm. a long time, and they just won't watch it because they don't want to know different. They're scared of knowing different. They're scared of what it means.
Too much, doesn't it? The thought, everything they've been taught, even subconsciously, they're not even actually thinking what I'm about to say, but subconsciously, the thought that they've been taught everything is completely wrong. You know, it's too much of a turmoil mentally to take in, and they would much sooner rather just carry on life knowing that whatever has been said is supposedly true.
Well, it's like, how far will they take it? You know, we know that in a multicultural society, they will eventually end up using every single resource they have trying to keep order, because everything in it naturally wants to pull apart and naturally wants to be with its own. And the truth always tries to come to the surface. So this is why we've seen, since the hoax of the gassings first came out, since then, there weren't laws against it, talking about it at first, but since then we've seen laws come out against it, not just in one country, but now in about 16 different countries. We've now got these hate crime laws, hate speech laws. We've now got increased penalties. We've got hate speech laws on top of hate speech laws. I think there's been about two or three different acts to do with this. So they have to keep putting more and more and more and more resources into this and clamping down on the slightest difference to what the regime say. And just this week, Twitter, it's been suggested on Twitter that they banned Donald Trump from Twitter.
Well, Trump's obviously famous for using Twitter. I'm not a Twitter user myself. I know people on the website use it. But people say, was it presidential? But I think Donald Trump was smart enough to realise the power of Twitter and getting the message out to people quickly. And they obviously have seen that he knows the power of Twitter and want to block him.
Well, the thing is, I mean, what Donald Trump says, that's not extremist, is it? It's not radical.
I wouldn't have thought so, no. I mean, it's certainly not to what some people could say online.
Not to the extent that we would talk
about.
It's
just the fact that people, I mean, what we saw in America, there's numerous groups and people against Trump, and Trump is not exactly what you would call an extremist.
These thought police, they want to stamp out everything. They've gone from, you know, trying to stamp out words like nigger to saying, well, we should be banning the president elect for saying that he wants to build a wall. You know, there's no barriers to them. They will keep going and changing the words that need to be banned until they ban the English language entirely, I think.
Yeah, well, if they have to, they will do. But the ultimate aim is, of course, is the ruling of the world. And to get to that point, they have to kill dissent. And there's different ways of killing dissent. And using censorship is one of them, obviously. Military arms and, you know, more physical violence is another. But certainly the censorship, when you stop a nation from actually saying a word, just imagine how powerful that is. It's incredibly powerful.
Well, I think if they control the language, they can control the way people think. That's the way they look at it, isn't it? Because when you think, you think in words, you use verbal language to think with. So they think if we can control the verbal language, we can alter the way that people think. But even if
But what we're also forgetting is the use of finances, because if the day comes when, you know, they stop the use of cash, then that's going to be another major step for them, because any kind of talk against the regime then, all they do is switch off your credit card and you can't buy any food.
Well, again, that's the transaction thing. That's the transaction thing again, isn't it? This basic need that we have to carry out transactions between one another, to trade for one thing for another. So this is the biggest fear, I think, if they do end up doing away with cash, is that they'll just be able to shut that off, that facility, for anyone that says anything that they don't like the sound.
If you're marching, if you're protesting, whatever you're protesting, whether it be political or whether it be a loss of a job, or you're trying to save your job, whatever, your face comes up on one of them cameras where they can recognise faces, it's too easy then for them just to go bump.
Well, they think if they can stop us using words like nigger or using words like faggot, that people won't see Negroes and homosexuals as being different to straight people. But I don't think you need to actually know a word to see that there's a difference. You don't need to have a word to feel uneasy when you're around homosexuals and know that there's something strange about them, something not right, and that shouldn't be there. And it's the same with Negroes. You don't need to have a different word for Negroes to know that these people are entirely different. Your dog's barking at them, the kids are screaming and crying when they see them for the first time. There's an instant feeling of knowing that these people are different. And yet the regime thinks that if they can stop us using these words, that we will no longer be able to see a difference between them. And it's got, as I say, it's gone so far now that somebody as mild as Donald Trump, they're saying we should ban him from Twitter. So the more people that come to our movement, the more people that wake up to this, that become nationalist and opposed to globalism, the more they double down on what they're doing. And the more they double down on what they're doing, the worse they look, and the more people move to our movement.
There's some talk of banning Trump just from coming to Britain.
Yeah, oh yeah.
At one point. So, it goes even further than the internet. Obviously it didn't happen, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people in our places would have liked that to happen.
Well, they look pretty stupid now, don't they? They really do look stupid. These people that were attacking Trump before he got elected, saying that he would never ever get elected, he didn't have a hope in hell, and insulting him. And
Obama was one of them.
Yeah. Well, they just look really stupid. But instead of adapting to that and saying, right, well, the worm has turned, we have a new zeitgeist now, everything has changed, we need to get with the public opinion, they're just carrying on as if that hasn't happened and thinking, well, what we'll have to do is just ban even more people, clamp down on even more people. I mean, they can't silence the whole Trump movement in America. I mean, if they were to ban Trump from Twitter, that would be the end of Twitter. I don't think anybody would use it anymore.
Well, doesn't this cry out Bolshevism from the Soviet Union? And that's exactly the model that we can look at. That is the gulags and anybody speaking out. Anybody with a cross, anybody with a Bible, anybody speaking out against communism, then you'd end up in the gulag. And that hasn't happened yet, but that's not saying it won't, because it's already been proven it's been used.
Well, what they would do there, they would say that anyone that spoke out against communism must be mad, so they must be put in the madhouse. And it's pretty close to that now, saying that the people that support Trump are all idiots, they've all got something wrong with them.
Interestingly enough, in Germany, what a lot of people don't realise is with the Holocaust law, if somebody's taken to court, they have no right to actually plead innocent. The only two pleas they can have is guilty, I'm insane, or guilty, please be lenient. So in the mainstream media, if it ever gets into the mainstream media and people say, oh, somebody's been jailed for Holocaust denial, they obviously think that it's been a fair trial and, at one stage, you could plead innocent, which is never the case. There is no innocence. There's in German courts, there's no truth. Truth means nothing. The fact is that the event happened, and that's it. So you're guilty as soon as you go into court. So you've got to get a sentence, whatever. And that's why some of the lawyers were obviously fighting on behalf of the clients, obviously up the line, and they got imprisoned as well.
Well, the lawyers had real problems because they tried to find something concrete that that Holocaust denying was supposed to be denying. And there wasn't anything actually put down. And the judge himself said, oh, it's obvious from looking at the newspapers that the Holocaust happened. So you don't know whether you should be saying, well, it's the 6 million number. If you say less than 6 million died, then you're breaking the Holocaust law. But then if you look at the actual official figures, you know, Auschwitz has dropped their figures from 4 million to 2 million. So that's obviously 2 million that have gone. So how can it still be 6 million? I mean, these sort of things, these sort of questions are what the lawyers had when they tried to find out exactly what it was that people were supposed to be denying.
There was nothing concrete. That truth is no defence, which is a classic, really, because once you get to that stage, you've no hope, have you?
Well, these laws, they're deliberately worded in such a way that they could be made to apply to anything. You know, because people will look at these laws and think, right, well, what is it that I'm exactly allowed to say and what is it that I'm not allowed to say? And you could apply those laws to, or you could make those laws apply to just about anything at all, especially when you say that they apply if somebody feels they might have been offended. Because I could say, well, I'd be offended if, say I was a Negro, I could say, well, I'd be offended if somebody offered me a banana. I could say I would be offended.
You're twisted,
Something simple like that. The way the laws are worded, you could get away with that. I mean, we've seen someone in America that was arrested for dressing up in a gorilla suit and handing out bananas at a Black Lives Matter demonstration. But, you know, I mean, that's people dress up as clowns, people dress up as fancy dress. It's all in the eye of the beholder whether that was offensive. I mean, the guy was just doing that for a laugh. And yet these laws can be made to apply to them. And we've got no laws to protect us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I find it interesting. Sky is unbelievably full of censorship. Because, again, I watched it last night, Aleppo. Aleppo's on the verge now of falling. Aleppo's been the base of the whole rebel movement in Syria. And a couple of weeks ago, I heard John Kerry asking the Russians to be lenient and, you know, ceasefire. But the Syrian army is going in and it's going in and it's wiping them out street by street. And consequently, you don't hear that from Sky. All you get from Sky is they'll pick a Syrian to come on a Skype and he'll talk about the tyranny of Assad, et cetera. And no mention of any rebels or civilians being forced to stay in Aleppo and even ISIS slaves, no mention of anything like that, just this constant barrage against Assad and against Putin, when really all they're doing is just destroying this last enclave of the rebels. So that again is another censorship. It's all over, you know, it really is when you're aware of it.
Well, the censorship has got so much that now that they've pretty much secured Aleppo and a lot of the hostages were able to get out, they came out and they said the rebels have been holding us hostage. They've been withholding the food from us and we couldn't get out. And thousands of them came out and the BBC had to admit this. And the BBC did interview some of them and they had to admit that it was the rebels that were attacking these people, because they were all saying, you know, we're so glad to get out and be rescued by the government. But later on that day, it was exactly the same news story, and it was the world news, and it was one of their Chinese diversity quota reporters, and he was claiming that it was Assad's troops that were bombing these people and using them as human shields. And that was just where he was so used to always presenting the anti-Assad storyline and the pro-rebel storyline that he mixed the two up. Because that is their guidelines. They cannot say anything positive about.
We've been saying it for 6 months, haven't we? Well, longer, probably. Yeah. Been saying it for the last 6 years.
It's the same thing white nationalism. They're not allowed to say anything positive about us. They've always got to insult us. They've always got to call us by insulting names. They're never allowed to actually show anything positive. That's actually in the journalist's guidelines. So what they do is they censor up the facts and they just try and put it across that we are these nasty people who don't like people just for the color of their skin, which is just an illogical nonsense when you look at it and you think about it and you think, you know, that's like saying, well, you know, I don't like the color of my sweets or whatever. I don't like this colored sweet, even when the sweets all taste the same. You know, it's a ridiculous thing to say that we don't like people just for the color of their skin, when it's obviously so much more than that.
It's interesting. I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks ago, they had the actual trial of the MP, can't remember her name there, who got shot during the Brexit campaign, and she was used, her death was used by the people who wanted to stay in Europe as a means of propaganda to try and stop the Brexit vote. The trial last week, the guy who's been charged with the murder hasn't uttered a word. He hasn't said a single word. And so everything what was said about him after the court case was all an assumption. And apparently they rolled out all this Nazi memorabilia or books or DVDs or some kind of, you know, link to it all, which wasn't really, I mean, it wasn't as though his house was covered in swastikas. It was just the fact that, you know, if he's got an interest in World War II, then he's obviously, you know, got an interest in certain parts of that war. But it was totally, it was an ideal opportunity for the media to just weigh in and call this, you know, anti-Brexit and a Nazi who attacked this, an anti-European and a Nazi who attacked this MP and killed her, without any real evidence, because the guy never really spoke anything.
Well, he had Schindler's List in his DVD collection, Nazis a Warning from History. He didn't have anything to show that he was a revisionist at all. As you say, Dennis, it was all just war memorabilia. They said he had a Nazi eagle. It was just a normal eagle that he had on his mantelpiece. He had a couple of small books, which are supposed to be English translations of reprints of National Socialist literature. One is SS Race Theory, and there was another one easily available online, and he would have got them from the National Alliance 30 years ago. But there was nothing new, nothing to show that he was linked with nationalists, and yet somehow they managed to link him with National Action, which is, you know, which is they're all half his age for a start. You know, it's a youth movement.
In fact, they did a bit of a spot on then, didn't they?
Yeah, but they drew these links with them. And again, they censored him. They wouldn't let him speak. He said after, you know, he allowed them to have their trial and find him guilty. He didn't contest that. And then once they'd found him guilty, he said, am I allowed to make a statement? And the judge wouldn't let him. And the judge had told the jury that this guy was a national socialist, far right, all of this nonsense, which the circumstantial evidence showed that he wasn't. But the jury obviously just listened to this judge. The judge was allowed to direct them. And the judge also told him he had to keep his mouth shut. Now, this is so strange, you know, that somebody would be accused of of terrorism and a political murder, but then not actually say the reason why he did it. Because he never said, did he?
No, he never said nothing. No, it were all assumptions, but made to look as fact, which is what they're very clever at. They really are.
Well, it seemed to me, just handed it over.
I'm not sure if you can remember, but back in Austria, just a number of years ago, there was a guy who kept, I think it was six women down in a cellar.
I remember.
Whether they were related to him or not, I can't remember, but all I can remember from that story is I remember him being matched up with Adolf Hitler because he was Austrian.
Well, with this one, you know, you would think that if he was going to make a political statement, he would tell people what it is and not allow the government to define what political statement it was. I mean, they said that this was to do with Joe Cox supporting Britain staying in the EU. There was no evidence for that whatsoever. I don't think there was even any evidence that he was a Brexiteer. He certainly never said anything about Britain leaving.
Yeah, so someone at the scene said that they heard somebody, or they said that somebody said that they heard somebody shout Britain first before she was attacked. Well, there was never no real concrete evidence of that.
Yeah, and what has that got to do with her leaving, her supporting staying in the EU? That was, it was just a cynical opportunism, I believe,
exactly, by the
government to try and link this unconnected killing with leaving the EU. And then they kept him silenced so that he couldn't say any different. You know, this is why they silenced him after the the court case. So what actually came out?
They got their way, haven't they?
Well, what actually came out in the newspapers after the court case was that he was being turfed out of his council house, and he'd been in his council house ever since he was a small child with his grandparents. He'd grown up there. His parents were no longer here, and the councillor said, "We're going to move you out from your council house." So apparently, it was so that a family of Pakistanis or Somalians could move in. Now, that's something that could have sent him over the edge, and it was suggested.
Yeah,
it was suggested that he went to his local MP and asked her for help, but he didn't go to her. So, you know, he can't even say that. Well, he was refused by Joe Cox any help, so that's why he went and attacked her. But he did. He didn't even ask her. It's a very strange situation there, and it is despicable of them to link that with national action. They've done the same before. There was some nutcase that attacked an Asian in a supermarket called, I think it was called Zach something or other, and they accused him of being part of national action, and yet he had an ISIS flag there, and he was, you know, talking about Allah on the videos from a few days before, and yet still they're linking that with national action.
Yeah.
They're trying to make out at the moment that nationalism is as big a threat as Islam. You've got the Prevent program and various others that were supposedly created to stop young people becoming radical Islamists. And yet what they're using them for is to go after young people at school that support UKIP and things like that. And they're asking the teachers to report them.
Liberals use that. I mean, the whole by-election was supposed to be about Heathrow Airport, but the Liberals turned it into an anti-Brexit campaign, and apparently, you know, they had everything going from the media and everything as usual. And in these by-elections, there's always, you know, a kind of a vote which is kind of a revolt in a way. So, you know, all right, we see the Liberals win, but they always lose the same seats at the general election. But now they're claiming, you know, that it's more ammo not to come out of Europe. You know, it's just an ongoing campaign. This is in a democratic country which had a democratic referendum, and still people are saying stay in. And they're even bringing Tony Blair back, I think, to try and mount a campaign as well.
Well, Tony Blair has said that he's going to give up his businesses and sink everything into a campaign to stop Brexit and Donald Trump.
They're not bringing a war criminal, is there?
Yeah, look at the company they're keeping. Well, this Liberal Democrat MP that got voted in the Richmond by-election, she got absolutely destroyed on the radio today. A radio host had her on there for an interview, and she was saying, well, when's the next election then? When are they going to have a second one? And she was saying, what do you mean? She said, well, it was awfully close, wasn't it? You know, it was only four points difference between them. Surely the electorate don't know what they want. They weren't told exactly what they want. They've got to have a second election for you. And she basically used all these arguments that the left have been using to try and annul the Brexit vote. And in the end, her personal secretary or press secretary ended up having to pull her off air and drag her away from the microphone because she was making such a fool of herself.
Yeah. Well, they were making out that she was just an ordinary person 18 months ago, and when she heard how the country was turning into this, you know, hatred split down the middle, and, you know, she decided to take up politics, and all this BS that they were saying last night, you know, I quietly smile to myself. It's all contrived, and it's all the narrative as it's been for a long, long time.
Well, they're doing the same thing in America that they did over here in Britain after Brexit. What they've done is they've had these big campaigns to get people to report so-called hate crimes, to get people to report criticism that they see of minorities online and elsewhere. So it's not that there's actually been a rise in hate crimes, but there's been a big drive to get people to report them. And anything happens to a minority, the police say to them, do you want to report this as a hate crime? Do you want to report this as a hate crime? And if that does get reported as a hate crime, the police get bonus points, don't they? Because they've got to find X amount of hate crimes every month in order to fill their quota. So this is the reason why these hate crimes have gone up in Britain and America. And because of that, they use that as an excuse to call for more censorship. This is why they say Donald Trump should be censored from Twitter, because there's been a rise in hate crime. You know, they've even said... Did you see that they've actually polled the Donald Trump Reddit, the subreddit? Just people discussing Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, that's interesting because... I was on Reddit a while back. I was invited to come on and tell the story around about the time when I just about finished the documentary and receive, you know, questions about it, which I did, to be fair. And people came on and they threw the usual questions at me, and I gave them, you know, the usual answers, and the documentary backed it all up. But there was a certain thread of people that was absolutely going bananas, the fact that I was even on Reddit answering these questions as best I could. And right at the very end of the month, they have in this particular thread, it's a documentary thread, they award the best documentary of the month. And obviously all the money would have been on mine because of, you know, the commotion it was causing. But come the end of the month, I think it was something on a documentary on a seashell, something as bland as that, you know, or how ants travel across the floor, something really weird.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah. But then it was found out, I got an apology a few days later, it was found that there was a conspiracy and they'd hidden the vaults or something, which obviously, you know, the greatest story ever told, won by a street and a half, if not more.
Did they have to recount the postal votes?
Well, they did some, but they did everything they could. But it was so ridiculous because nobody had actually heard of this other documentary.
So you didn't get banned from there, but people discussing Donald Trump have.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they asked me to go on again as soon as communism by the back door was finished, but I haven't had the opportunity as yet anyway, whether well or not it still remains. But yeah, so it's a weird one, isn't it? There's definitely a left wing element in there, quite vocal, quite aggressive, and quite dishonest.
Well, I think these platforms that up until this year, I mean, that they would say, "Oh, we all support free speech, and Twitter supports free speech." Thanks to Twitter, we had the Arab Spring over there in Egypt, and it was a Twitter revolution. And until Reddit was taken over, Reddit was proud to be a bastion of free speech. And now they've all turned very liberal, and SJW are clamping down on the slightest thing. And you've also seen thousands of alt-right Twitter accounts disappear, you know, just in the last week. Some of them... accounts that really weren't that extreme. I mean, you're talking people like Richard Spencer's MPI account, which didn't do any trolling. All it did was say when the NPI conference was on, and yet that was banned. So it was obviously not for anything that he said. It was just an ideological thing. It was just, we don't like you, so we're going to ban you.
Yeah, well, I think this came to light with the election in America, didn't it, really? I think people realised the power of the internet. Obviously, you know, without the internet, I really couldn't see that election being pulled off by Trump. And that is the power of it. And that was also the power behind the documentary. And, you know, even though it's their kind of invention, it's kind of backfired on them. And they're probably doing the best they can now to try and salvage what they can. Because, again, they were talking about Obama handing over the internet to the United Nations. And if anybody knows anything about the United Nations, it's a communist organization with a Luciferian religion streaked through it. So if we want these people in charge of the internet, it is the end.
Well, yes, we were discussing this off air, weren't we, Dennis, about the UN, and because the internet's always been controlled by America, and now it's controlled by the UN. But I did hear, I think it might have been Millennial Woes, it was either Millennial Woes or Weave that was talking about this, and they were saying that all the while that you have actually got one country that does have free speech, then that will keep free speech on the internet. Because if America has free speech, then American sites are going to be making use of the free speech laws. So if we haven't got free speech in Britain, we'll still be able to go on the American sites and read revisionist history. We'll still be able to read all about the Holocaust, you know?
Well, interestingly enough, what they do is, I mean, I tried to go on a Zumwalt site once, and a red warning comes up saying, you know, this site is not safe, you're probably going to get a virus. Just to turn people away, didn't stop me, but I mean, I guess it could have stopped a number of people. So there are various ways that they do try to deter people from getting on these websites.
Well, a lot of them are banned from the libraries. If you go into the library, you won't be able to get on the Daily Stormer website. I'm not sure if you can find Radio Aryan or The Greatest Story Never Told.
But most of these...
Yeah, well, most of these publicly available internet censors all the sites with any dissidents on there. Any dissent to the prevailing opinion is clamped down upon. I mean, all of this whole stopping people from thinking any different to the way that the government's thinking is totally alien to the way that I was brought up at school. I was always taught you know, that you should always think of things from both sides and try to understand the other person's point of view. It was never you should silence the other person's point of view if it's different to your own, which is what That's people right. are being taught now. This is what shocks me, is that these liberals accept that and think that that's an acceptable way to deal with a differing opinion.
Yeah, and everything else about the views is liberal, apart from censorship.
Yeah. It's very strange, because, you know, when you're brought up, you're told that it's all the right wing and the fascists that clamp down on free speech, don't allow anybody to think any different. Yeah. And it's completely the opposite. It's the left wing that seems to silence it.
Doesn't that ring a bell since World War II?
Well, yeah, it's all since World War II. I mean, we used to have a real diversity of thought, and we used to be able to have these debates with people without fear of being called names or being
silenced. Or saying a single word. Or
yeah, they amazing, used to. Isn't it? Yeah. They used to interview Oswald Mosley. I was listening to an interview the other day with David Duke. And he's being interviewed by a British interviewer. The British interviewer is a complete idiot. He's saying, oh, the Germans had ovens. The Germans had ovens.
Yeah.
But at least he interviewed David Duke.
Yeah, today they won't get the interview today. Yeah. Well, only on the internet.
Well, this is just it. They know platformers now. But 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they would interview people and they would have these debates. I think what they've learned is that they can't actually win in a debate. So they seek to silence us. And the more they seek to silence us, the more they call us names, call us bigots, call us racists. And the more they call normal people that, just people that are being called that just because they support Donald Trump, the more that makes them think, well, these nationalists are right. I want to find out more about what the racists have to say. If I'm a racist and a bigot, I want to know what the racists and the bigots have to say if they're all like me. And they're starting to realize this now, but they've got no other way of dealing with it, because they can't actually hold a debate. All their guidelines say that they should just silence us.
Well, in some cases, it still works, but it didn't work with Trump as much, because normally when two people are getting into a political argument like that, as soon as the one word says, one side says, ah, but you're a Nazi, the conversation ends. You know, suddenly, you know, the nation watching, who were probably up to that point taking both sides in, as soon as they heard that word Nazi, then that's it, game over. But with Trump, they tried that with Trump, and they called him Hitler, and they had obviously pictures of him up on the internet with moustache, etc. But it didn't work with him for some reason. You know, people got over that one.
Well, it's actually a way of admitting that you've lost the argument. If you start calling the other person names, it means you've lost the argument. You haven't got an answer for them. All you can do is come out with ad hominems. So it's basically the most ungraceful way there is of losing an argument. So by calling
the other way, it's pull a gun at a shooting person to end that argument. It's the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's you know, that's what these leftists will resort to, isn't it? You know, that they do get violent. Richard Spencer, there was a left-wing Jewish journalist that gave out Richard Spencer's home address and called for people to go around there with baseball bats. He lost his job, thankfully.
Yeah.
You know, that was good to see that he lost his job. But he felt that that was okay for him to do that.
Well, we saw that how violent the leftists could be in America when Trump won the election. I mean, these people who were you know, spreading this kind of, you know, we're tolerant and we live in a society where we put up anything and, you know, if everybody's equal, all of a sudden, like, we didn't get in their way. streets were burning.
Vicious savages, the way they behave. They will gang up on people. I mean, I forget her name, that the lady that makes the videos with Red Eye, she went out to try and interview people at the NPI conference. She went out there to interview the Antifa and see what they had to say. And they all just ganged up on her cameraman and beat him up. You know, 10 of them on one. They weren't interested in having a debate. They weren't interested in having anything to say. Millennial Woes went out there and they didn't even know who he was. They thought he was one of them. It shows you how they know nothing at all about what we actually have to say. They just attack dogs like Pavlov's dogs. When Pavlov's dogs heard the bell, they would start salivating. And these hordes, when they get told, oh, that's a Nazi, they just go and attack them. They have no idea what it is that people are saying.
It's a fact. They have got no idea. But they're just enraged and off they go.
Well, this is it. And the more they do that, the more they drive people into our camp, basically. This has been scientifically proven. Did a podcast with Zeiger, a radio Aryan roundtable a couple of weeks back, and he cited the scientific study that the Jews have done, which basically, I mean, it's common sense. It just shows that the more you call people names, the less likely they are to come around to your point of view, and the more likely they are to associate themselves with the names that you are calling them. So what these Jews were calling for, they were saying these SJWs have got to have a change of attack. They've got to try and debate us. But of course, they can't do that. They haven't got any of them capable of that.
Well, they know the truth as much as we do.
Well, you know, all they can do is push and try and silence us. And the more they try and do that, the worse they look. So what is actually beneficial to us to get them to demonstrate as much as possible and make fools of themselves as much as possible. Because the more people see the state of what they look like and then compare that to us in our suits, you know, with being eloquent and talking about good and decent things and wanting to do the best for our country, and then they look at that rabble, which is just dirty and stinking and talking about faggotry and transsexuals, you know, there's no comparison. More people are going to come to our side. More people come to our side every day. Just this week, if I want to feel good, what I now do is go to the Daily Express or the Daily Mail comment section on an article to do with immigration. And you will see that every single one of those comments, the commenter is red-pilled, is one of us.
Yeah, I'm sure immigration has had a huge effect on people, because when you're looking at countries what supposedly won the World War, World War II, and then suddenly they turn around and the cities are no longer, you know, reflecting their people, there's obviously a problem.
Well, it's a serious problem, and we're fighting back against it, and we'll continue fighting back against it. Dennis, we're nearing the end of the podcast now. I don't know if you want to let people know where they can find your work before we finish.
Well, despite the ban, you know, you can still find the GraceToyNeverTold.tv website still running the feature, and numerous other ones on YouTube as well. The Communism by the Back Door is on the communismbythebackdoor.tv website, and also on the same name of the channel on YouTube, along with the Dennis Wise channel.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming on, Dennis, once again. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week at the same time, same place, Radio Aryan. Hopefully we'll have Messerschmitt with us. And don't forget to send a Christmas card to our prisoners of war. They will really appreciate it, and you'll feel really good once you've done it. So hopefully we'll be seeing you all again next week. So until then, have a great weekend.
Thank you.